Welcome to Cuz We're Nerds, the podcast that covers trends and new releases in comics, movies, video games, board games, and much more. I'm your host, Caleb, and with me is my friend, Dylan.
What's up, guys?
Pokemon's been around for a while, and honestly, it hasn't really changed. With the impending release of Pokemon Sword and Shield, that's more evident than ever. Why so little change? What's preventing it? And does it even need to? Find out on this week's episode of Cuz We're Nerds. All right, man, welcome to the show. First time guest.
Hey, man, what's up?
Not much. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
No problem, man. I thought this topic would be a great topic for you. You are a resident Pokemon expert.
I guess you could call me that. I don't know. I've been playing since I was like 3 or 4, I think, leading up to, you know, before we started recording this, was telling you about like the first Game Boy that I got, and I think it was like 1996 or something like that.
So yeah.
I was like 3 or 4 years old, been playing Pokemon since then. So hopefully I know a little bit what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you are probably the most versed in Pokemon out of anyone I know. And I know some people that were like hardcore. My cousins, Zach, who used to be, well, is slash kind of used to be one of the hosts on the show. He and his brothers were really big into Pokemon. They did the video games, the movies, the card games, like, you know, the whole thing. Which I think we all did. But you, by far, for the video games at least, are way more into it than they
are. Yeah, I still, like, actively play them. I've got, like, probably 4 or 5 different DS systems at my house that I'll play.
4 or 5?
Yeah, so I have, like, 2 DS Lites. I've got 3... 3DSs. One of them has a broken screen, which was a sad story, but got it for Christmas, and then the screen broke like a month later when it fell off my nightstand. Yeah, was really, really sad about that, but we ended up replacing it. But yeah, it's probably one of my favorite game, just games in general. I like some other ones like fairly consistently, like I do with Pokemon, but Pokemon has been a faithful friend throughout all the years of my life. So yeah, but was like really into the cards growing up, had like a huge collection, gave them away, and then was really sad about that later on in life, and then spent a ton of money to get like more Pokemon cards and rebuild a collection, and watched the show a lot when I was younger and the movies and stuff, and then yeah, games and all that good stuff. So
I have a tragic story, actually, about my Pokemon card collection, where when I was younger, I had a whole bunch. And back in the day, I also did Yu-Gi-Oh! And we had a garage sale at the house. And I wanted to sell some of my cards. Because I wanted money. You know, you're a little kid. You don't have money. You're just trying to do whatever you can. So I'm out there with my book. Of course, all my cards are in the pages. You know, like the 9 cards to a page. And some kid comes over and he's looking at them, and like, he pulls them out. He's looking at them. No big deal. And then his parents are like, all right, Jimmy, whatever his name was, we're leaving. Come on. And he's holding my cards and he runs and leaves.
So he just totally like jacked your cards.
He took them and they were like good cards.
That's depressing, man. That's really sad.
And I was so frustrated. I was like, Mom, he took my cards. But by the time that happened, like, they were already gone.
I would have gotten their license plate number. I would have gotten the make, model, and color of the car.
I was like maybe 10 or younger.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know.
That's sad, man. That's a hard loss. Like, I know for me, I willingly gave them away because I was probably in like 4th or 5th grade, and I was like, I'm not really looking at them all that much anymore. And there was like a younger kid who was into Pokemon cards, and I was like, maybe he'll benefit from them. So I gave them to him, and there has not been a day since then that I have like not regretted giving them away. So it's always sad to part with stuff like that, whether you choose to or not.
It is so much. And I remember one time, like, burying stuff as a kid was like the coolest thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like buried treasure. And I had this Pikachu lunchbox tin thing. And I was like, I know what's going to be cool. I'm going to put my Pokemon cards in this.
Oh, man.
And it's going to be a time capsule. And so I went out into the backyard and I dug this tiny hole and I put like a giant stack of Pokemon cards, like this tall. For listeners, it's like 6 inches tall or something, 6 or 7 inches tall.
Yeah.
And I put it in there and I buried it. I covered it with dirt. And like 3 months later, I went out and I was super excited. Because, I mean, 3 months is forever as a kid.
Yep. The value has skyrocketed in these Pokemon cards.
So I go out there and I dig it up and I open it. And, of course, this was just a regular metal lunchbox. Water got into it.
Yep.
And destroyed everything.
Were there any holographics in there?
Oh, tons.
Oh, that's
and
sad,
I had a legendary... I think I had a Celebi in there. Or something, and I was, like, devastated, because I was trying to pull it apart, and it, like, wouldn't come apart, except, you know, it rip it.
Yeah.
And, oh.
It's sad when stuff like that gets wet. It,
right?
Like, cements it together with everything else that it's touching, so it's just, they're gone, man.
So, PSA for everyone out there, don't bury your favorite cards.
Yeah, and don't give them away, either. It's good to be altruistic and kind and nice and stuff, but if there's something that you highly value that was a big part of your childhood and you can hold on to it, hold on to it, because you'll never know if you want to revisit those memories and all that good stuff. So, words of wisdom from Dylan.
I feel that way about a lot of things. I had a GameCube, and I sold the GameCube because I got the Wii. It was backwards compatible, which is fine. But I also sold Super Mario Sunshine, and I was like, now I super regret it. Any console stuff I've ever sold, I have highly regretted. So I have committed to never selling any of my console stuff. Which is a bad idea, because I have too many.
Yeah, we actually were talking about that the other day. I think it was like last week or something you mentioned that to me, just about not selling consoles, because, and this maybe is a good segue into what we're talking about, if Sword and Shield sucks, I told you that I was planning on selling my Switch just because I don't really play anything on it, don't have a lot of time to play on it, and that's kind of the main reason that I got my Switch, was to play Sword and Shield when it came out and Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee was disappointing enough to where I actually haven't played it all the way through, because it just hasn't kept my attention. I mean, I've played the Kanto games like countless numbers of times between Red and Blue and Yellow and Fire Red and Leaf Green. And now Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee, and it's... I mean, it's the same thing, pretty much. It's just reskin, so... Yeah, I haven't completed it yet. I've tried, like, several times to keep trekking through, but I always get to, like, that one stage where it's, like, the fifth and sixth badge, and then it's just such a grind from there. There's, like, hundreds of trainers along the routes just to get to, like, the next spot, and...
Yeah.
I don't know. Just don't have as much time for that, you know?
I understand. Although, I will disagree with you, because I loved Let's Go Pikachu.
Yeah. It was okay.
I kind of knew what it was going to be.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But you did mention that it was just kind of like a reskin of the old games, which kind of brings us around to our topic today, which is Pokemon hasn't changed, or maybe it's a question. Has Pokemon changed?
I'm going to go ahead and give my answer to that. No, it hasn't changed. Like, there's been small incremental changes throughout the years, but in my opinion, the base formula has not changed at all.
Yeah.
And to some people, that's a good thing. To some people, that's a bad thing. We can talk more about...
But where do you stand on it? Is it a good thing or a bad thing?
I go back and forth on it just because, you know, there's the old adage, like, if it's not broken, don't fix it. Mm-hmm. So... I mean, it's clearly working for them on some level, because they make so much money off of it. They're able to churn out pretty much the same thing game after game and still make consistently a lot of money off of it. And I think what they're banking on is those small changes in between the games and some stuff like upgrading consoles and upgraded graphics and normally like the little gimmicky things. Some of them have been good gimmicks. Some of them have been bad gimmicks. I think it's like anything. And I think it really just depends on the person too. But as far as what I think, if it's been beneficial or not for the formula not to change, I don't know. I like the base formula. I think that there's some things, what I have a hard time with is when they add good features in one game and then take them out in an upcoming game.
Yeah.
I have a hard time with that just because, you know, you might have what you feel like is the perfect game and you want more of that, and the little features that make that a perfect game for you, you don't want it to go away in future games, because then when the future games come out, it's like you still want incentive to play and enjoy those features that you enjoyed in the previous game. But I also understand, since, I mean, we're both in software development, I don't know if that's something that you've talked about before, but I know that you know, as you add more and more features over time, like, it gets more and more difficult mm-hmm. to continually, like, re-implement that stuff right. and maintain it, but...
Especially with Pokemon.
Yeah.
Because, like, anything that has to do with the sheer number of Pokemon they have in the game, like, that factors exponentially.
Yeah.
With everything they have. Like, adding one new animation, if you're dealing with 700, 800 Pokemon... Yeah. That's a lot of work.
I mean, I don't know if you've been up to date on some of the stuff that has gone on in the Pokemon community, but there's actually been a big controversy about Sword and Shield because they're not going to have that. Well, they're claiming that they're not going to have all the Pokemon in the game.
Yeah, I did hear that.
So, and their reasonings for it has been that, you know, with, I guess it's like 800 and some Pokemon now that, they supposedly had designed their models for the 3D system, the 3DS system, so that they could port them forward for future consoles. But then apparently they can't now, which I have a hard time believing that, because when you make a 3D model, unless you're like retexturing it, I mean, it's pretty much...
I mean, even retexturing a 3D model is not all that hard.
Yeah.
The only thing I could guess was because they did that for, what was it, X and Y was yeah. the first ones? That maybe they weren't anticipating jumping to a console and the low poly count is yeah. a problem?
I don't know, though. Some people have done some pretty like in-depth comparisons between the animations from the 3DS systems and the Switch systems so far that we've seen in the trailers for Sword and Shield. And people are... It seems like they're siding more along the lines that it's the same models. So... I don't know. I've been trying to stay out of that just because I feel like sometimes people can get really, like, toxic about stuff like that.
Yeah. And
I know that people are pretty frustrated about it and everything, but I'm still, at least where I'm at with Sword and Shield is I'm interested in trying it out and giving it a shot, but it's like everything that I've seen so far, there's been some stuff, but some of the gimmicks that they've revealed, like, I think they're doing, like, a Pokemon camp thing where you can, like, cook curry for your Pokemon. I'm just not really interested in stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, they've had gimmicks like that in the past. Like, in the Generation 3 games, they had where you could make Pokeblocks, and that was yep. fun because it was, like, the little mini game. And then, I'm trying to think, they had berries and poffins in Generation 4, which is, it was similar to the curry, but it was, like, a pastry type thing that you would make. And it's just that kind of aspect of the gameplay has never really captured my attention. It's always been more about, like, the collecting. Like, I've always been into collecting stuff mm-hmm. between the cards and the actual game and the Pokemon in the game. So, I'm more interested in that, which is why it's so sad that not all of the Pokemon are going to be in there. Just because, you know, there's favorites that I have that probably aren't going to make the cut. And there's probably favorites for everybody that aren't going to make the cut. And
yeah.
I think that's, you know, some of the criticisms that people have had are about... You know, how are they making this decision? Because, like, what stays and what goes? Because I think some people were saying that they were making the decision based off of game balance, but I think there are other ways to go about that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough thing with that many Pokemon trying to port it forward. And I think that this is probably the first game that they really stand to lose people on.
Yeah.
Because, like, the games have totally been pretty much the same. There's been minor improvements, mostly graphically, until X and Y, and then they went into 3D with that.
Yep.
And that was kind of the first, quote-unquote, major jump forward for Pokemon.
Yeah.
And then jumping to the Switch with Let's Go, I think... had a lot of really good faith because of the things they did with it. Obviously, it was remakes of Yellow.
Yep.
You could see the Pokemon in the wild without going into battles, which is really yeah. cool. You could ride the Pokemon. It yeah. played a lot on the nostalgia.
Yep.
And then it added enough of those cool little features that it felt cool.
Yeah.
But with the next one coming out, Sword and Shield, it being a main generation pair. Because, like, Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee weren't. They were spinoff games, technically. Yep. That builds a lot of hype, just the fact that they're mainline. And then when you say, oh, we're putting it on the Switch,
yeah,
that builds this expectation of, okay, well, it's going to be something completely different.
Yeah.
And I think that some Pokemon fans are fine with it staying the same. I would say there's a very vocal community that feel maybe frustrated that it hasn't changed. And maybe yeah. you know more about that than I do. But when they show off the gameplay of what they've done, it just doesn't feel different enough.
Yeah.
I mean, the things that feel different to me are, well, we've sort of kind of taken a step backwards because you can't really see the Pokemon in the wild anymore. I think there's a hybrid.
Like, yeah,
you can see,
like,
some,
yeah,
and some are random, which is weird. And like, the Pokemon grow. When they grow, the textures don't look that great.
Yeah, so that's the new, I think it's called Dynamax feature. There's like two versions of it. There's Dynamaxing, and I think it's Gigamaxing. So, yeah, and like I said, there's just like gimmicks that they add, and that's not one that I'm super excited about. I remember when I saw it in the reveal trailer, I just stopped and like thought to myself, this looks really dumb. Like, this is stupid. I don't understand the point in them adding this. And maybe they're gonna, you know, make it cool or something. But like, I think the past three generations, they've tried to do stuff to like change up the equation a little bit. So in Generation 6 with X and Y, they added Mega Evolution, which in my opinion was one of the biggest and best things that they changed with the core gameplay. Just the ability for a Pokemon to have like a leveled up form that was temporary in battle, and had a limitation of only having one on your team that could do that. I thought that was great. It refreshed a lot of Pokemon. So some Pokemon that were people's favorites who weren't really viable for battle because of their stats now had a viable option to them, which was really cool. And I think it changed the scene a lot. I was super into that. I still am. So I was really sad when they are not carrying that feature forward.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little disappointed when they said that they weren't going to be doing new Mega Evolutions, and then I think they're not carrying it forward, at least in Sword and Shield. But I know they had it in Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee. Like I said, haven't gotten that far in it, though. But and then in Generation 7 with Sun and Moon, they added Z moves, which are like Mega Evolution for moves that I think you can, I can't even remember. It's like you could maybe use them once a battle or something like
that. Yeah, it's like a special move, isn't it? Or something?
Yeah, it's like super overpowered without the drawback of, like, you know, they traditionally have had moves like Hyper Beam or Explosion, which do a ton of damage, but you either knock your Pokemon out in the process or you have to recharge a turn. And so it didn't have any drawback like that other than your Pokemon wouldn't be able to hold another item other than like the crystal that allowed it to use that move. But I even thought that that was kind of stupid. I don't want to hurt people's feelings, but like, there's probably some people that really like Z moves, but
I personally didn't like them either because they felt OP. Honestly, I wasn't a big fan of Mega Evolutions either. Because I feel like it's kind of like when they discover a new evolution for a Pokemon.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of that either because it feels like they're just retroactively making changes.
Yeah.
Just to do it.
And that makes sense. Like, I see where you're coming from with that. I tend to disagree on that aspect of things. Like, I know they recently released a new evolution for Farfetch'd called Sirfetch'd. You're over there shaking your head. It's okay. I think it's an interesting way to like refresh, like I said, Pokemon that haven't been viable before. And I think it's cool. I think the only thing that it makes it difficult for them is looking back to games that didn't have those Pokemon in them. How do you
justify it?
Yeah. How do you justify that? It's made like some interesting difficulties with the gameplay where I think they had to create in the games, like between doing remakes of previous games and stuff and including newer Pokemon that were released after the original games, they've had to do like these weird things where I think they're technically like parallel universes that happen in Pokemon now. So like you have Ruby and Sapphire and then you have Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire, which take place in completely different universes, even though it's the same game. It's just on a different console, but they had to come up with this concept in order to make it not seem like that there's an issue with having Mega Evolutions and these new Pokemon in Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire.
Most of the games are only very loosely coupled at best anyway. Yeah. So does it really matter?
I don't know. And I think that that like leads into another thing is that I think some people, and I'm in this category, I would much rather prefer the games lead into one another, not necessarily like a episodic type deal, but my favorite game is Gold and Silver and Heart Gold and Soul Silver, because man, those games are just so good. But one of the best things about it is that not only does it have the Johto region, and also you can go back to the Kanto region, which I think everybody loves that feature just because there's two regions in one game.
Yeah.
And the fact that they were able to fit that into a Game Boy Color game is just, is literally magic.
Yeah.
It's crazy that they were able to do that. But I really liked how those were connected because it felt like a sequel. And I know another game that they tried to do a similar thing with that was in Generation 5 with Black and White. And Black and White 2, they had a direct sequel to the games that preceded them. And I actually really like those two. So Black and White 2 is probably up there in my top 5 or top 3 favorite games just because like it feels good when they interconnect and they like lead into something else. Even if the plot doesn't interweave together, it's just nice when your effort in one game is rewarded with more content, like following it, you know?
And that's kind of funny because I was actually thinking the exact opposite a little bit. I totally agree with you. And Gold is my favorite game of the series. It's so good. Having the two regions is great, but also it is a sequel.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end you can find Red, you run into Team Rocket and they talk about being disbanded years ago. So I really like that. But if we're talking about like the Pokemon issue, so one of the things that the games have sort of kind of changed and also not is each generation introduces new Pokemon and they add that to the list of all the other Pokemon they've had.
Yeah.
So it just keeps growing and growing and growing, which is now why we're having problems in Sword and Shield and people are getting upset.
Yeah.
One of my ideas on how to solve it is, well, what if each Pokemon game is just standalone?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't need to connect. You could say they're all different universes. In fact, I think that would be way more interesting if you took the core Pokemon gameplay and you applied it to, like, this is a brand new game.
Yeah.
Like, completely different. We can do whatever we want with it. It's Pokemon set in space. It's a sci-fi entry in the series. And, you know, and then you could play with that thing and you don't have to worry about all the Pokemon I've been in before because it's like its own thing. I think that would be really cool because you could still introduce new Pokemon. You could theoretically have some of the old Pokemon and it just be the way it is. You don't have to explain it anymore.
Yeah.
Instead of having this weird sort of connected, but not really connected game series that they have now.
Yeah. I think one of the issues that has probably prevented them from doing something like that is just they have their mainline mascots, so like Pikachu and Eevee and Meowth and all the starter Pokemon. And I think if they were to go that route and just kind of, you know, forget, act like that those don't exist and that it's like a segmented reality, is that I think it, from a brand standpoint, it makes it difficult for them to like continue to market on what they've marketed off of, which I think goes back to this conversation in general. It seems like a continuing pattern with Pokemon is they have this well-worn track in the ground that they have like stuck to for, what is it, like 15, 20 years, something like that.
Over 20 years now.
Yeah, I think they had like the 25th or something like that anniversary. And it's good that they found something that works for them. But I think another thing too that we've been talking about is they don't really have much competition either. Like, I know you did an episode about Pokemon and Digimon and how you said that Digimon was superior to Pokemon, which is okay.
Specifically the animes.
Yeah.
Just making that clear.
Which I watched Digimon growing up too. I didn't like watch it as religiously as I watched Pokemon, but it was a good show. It was really cool. I had Digimon cards and stuff. That's not what we're talking about this weekend. We can get back to the topic at hand, but there hasn't been much competition. And I think it's, for the most part, pretty universally agreed that competition, like, breeds inspiration and change. And I think that's probably something that hasn't really forced them to change, is because the only thing that they're really competing with is previous things that they've already put out.
Yeah.
And so I know that there's, like, a Kickstarted game that's coming out that I told you about called Temtem, I think, which is a pretty close rip off of Pokemon, but it's supposed to come out for the Switch and I think Xbox and stuff and for the PC. And I'm actually really excited about it because it had it looked like and felt like Pokemon, but it was, what is it, an MMO?
Oh, yeah, an yeah. MMO. Massively multiplayer online game.
Yeah, I have a hard time saying that one. But it looked cool. It had a lot of features that I think people have wanted and that they've implemented in current games. But, like, I know another thing that people have wanted is, like, an MMO Pokemon game. And
or an RPG.
Yeah, like, they refuse, for some reason, they will not put one out. I don't know why.
I don't know why either. And that's, like, that's where I feel Pokemon has gone astray. I mean, if we jump back in our minds, cast your mind back to the 90s, if you were alive then.
What a good time.
Right? They experimented so much with different types of Pokemon games in the 90s. I mean, you had Pokemon Snap, you had Pokemon Stadium.
Which, both of those were great games.
Right.
They were so much fun to play.
And you had some ones that weren't so good, like the Pikachu talking one.
Yeah, I forgot what that was called. Yeah,
but there was a lot of experimentation.
Yeah.
And I feel like that carried through to the early 2000s a bit when you had things like Pokemon Coliseum, Coliseum 2, and like Mystery Dungeon, things like that. But they kind of stopped doing a lot of those.
Yeah, like I know they had Pokemon Ranger on the DS family line. And I think that they, I don't know if they're still making the Mystery Dungeon games, but I think that they've carried through with those. I've actually never played any of the Mystery Dungeon games, but I've heard some of them are pretty good story-wise. Yeah. Yeah, they just, I mean, I feel like they haven't really added much to their repertoire. And to your point, like, earlier on, I think that they were experimenting more. Like, something that I've been really sad about is the fact that they haven't had a stadium or Coliseum-type game. The last one that they had was Pokemon Battle Revolution for the Wii, which the graphics on it were terrible, but
yeah.
It was cool because, like, I know a really good friend of mine and I, we would connect our DSs to the Wii and we would actually use that to battle because you could see everything like large scale and yeah. It was cool, but I mean it wasn't Pokemon Stadium where it had like all the Pokemon available to yeah. You to battle with right out of the box. Yeah, they just, I don't know why they have kind of like ditched that format,
that whole side thing too, like, and the only other like side story spin-off Pokemon game that isn't a mainline type game that I can think of that's recent is Pokken Tournament.
Yeah.
But that's not even that recent. Like, that was from 2014 or 15.
That's crazy that was that long ago.
And it wasn't even supposed to be a console game.
Yeah.
It originally debuted in Japan as an arcade game.
Yeah.
And it did so well that they said, well, let's put this on the console. And then it didn't even make it over here until I think the Switch was the first time it finally came out.
I think they had, like, initially had it for the Wii U. I didn't play it. It actually looks really good, and I think that that is something that, you know, that's, like, the kind of innovation that they need. I know a really good friend of mine who's played probably as long as I have, the one that we would do the DS battle systems on the Wii. Like, I think he's mentioned ideas about how it would be cool if they had more of, like, a live battling system in Pokemon.
A real time.
I'm not even sure how they would implement something like that, which makes sense that I'm not one of the developers because I wouldn't know how to implement it. But I think it's hard for me to get behind something that I can't see implemented. You know, I think it's when there's like a concrete example in front of me, it's really easy to just be like, yeah, that looks cool or that doesn't look cool. But when I don't really know how they would do that just because there's like a lot of moving parts to that, you know?
I mean, in my mind, like the game I've wanted forever, and I think a lot of people have kind of dreamed of is like first person RPG Pokemon, which was what I was hoping the move to Switch would kind of help with. Technically Pokemon is an RPG, but it's definitely not a first person RPG.
Yeah.
And it's pretty antiquated. And it's systems. So, like, in my mind, think kind of like Skyrim.
Yeah.
Like, first-person mode, right? You go around, you see the Pokemon in the wild, you go up, and you actually have to aim with a Pokeball, throw the Pokeball, catch them. The way battles in my mind work is you throw the Pokeball out, and then player control shifts. The camera moves onto the Pokemon. Mm. You're playing as the Pokemon now, probably third-person. And you've got maybe four buttons with four attacks that you can add. And that's not that difficult, especially if you say, all right, for this game, we're only going to do 100 Pokemon.
Yeah.
Which I think would be completely valid in a situation like that, because your assets are going to have to be far more high quality.
Yeah.
You know, your animations and all that. And you can even reuse moves. I mean, like, Tackle, you animate that for a four-legged creature and a two-legged Pokemon, and you're done.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's two different ones you have to do for one move, but, like, there's things you can do. Or maybe you don't even animate a Tackle. Maybe it's just running into the other Pokemon.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's opportunities like that that they just have there, especially with some of the fan-made projects that have come out that kind of get shut down. There are templates out there, and people want these things, and they're just not doing it. And I don't understand why they wouldn't at least try something like that for a spinoff.
Yeah. I know, you know, on the topic of fan-made games, there's actually been, like, a lot of really good fan-made Pokemon games that have really, like, changed stuff up. I can't remember some of the names of them just because they're a dime a dozen until they get...
There's a lot. There's,
cease,
like,
and desisted there's by Nintendo.
Glazed and... I don't even know.
Yeah, there's, like, I think the big one that had that cease and desist was Pokemon Uranium, but...
Yeah.
There's one, I can't remember the name of it, but it had the concept where it was kind of like a post-apocalyptic world where Pokemon were harder to find, and they had, like, variants... It might have been Uranium, actually, that had, like, radiation variants and stuff.
Yeah, that was Uranium.
Yeah, and, like, that's cool. Like, I know another thing that some fan-made Pokemon games have added are Delta variants of Pokemon. So, in the card series, they had, like, back in the Generation 3 days, I think is what it was. It was, like, Delta species Pokemon, which were Pokemon that you knew, but they had a different typing to them because they were...
Oh, okay.
Yes, like...
It's like the Alolan forms and stuff.
Yes, yeah, sort of. Except that, like, you would have... Yeah, kind of. So, like, typing-wise, it was, like, the Alolan forms. In the card game, they had the same artwork. But in some of the fan-made games, they've had Delta species Pokemon that is really similar to Alolan forms, actually, where they look completely different. They match their new typings and stuff. Which, on the topic of Alolan forms, I actually thought that that was really cool. Like I said, I've been a fan from the start of kind of, like, new evolutions or, like, reskinning some Pokemon. I think the regional variants makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
I
think it makes sense for regions that are very different.
Yeah.
So, like, the Alolan ones, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know if it makes sense for, like, some of the other regions that came prior because they're also similar. Some of them look stupid or look goofy. Like, you know, the mascot is Exeggutor.
Yeah.
Because his long neck.
All I can think of is seeing memes on Reddit of, like, four or five posts tall where people, like, try to make the neck line up perfectly.
Which, I mean, like, on one hand, it is really stupid, but at the same time, it's kind of clever.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is, like, it was a nod back to, there's a very small, small set of cards that they came out with, and they had had an Exeggutor artwork, like, back in Generation 2 days, that had a really long neck, and it was cool that they, like, you know, took a piece from that, like, history, I guess you can call it, of Pokemon, and, like, brought it forward to new games. And, yeah, it looks ridiculous. I think it looks ridiculous, but... And I don't really use it, but I think it's cool. It just adds a lot of, like, variety to the game. And,
yeah.
And like I said, I don't really know how to solve the problem of having, like, 800-plus Pokemon with different variants. They seem to still be going on that train, though, because they have Galarian forms now for Sword and Shield, which, it's like you said, I think when it makes sense in the region that you're in to have a regional variant, like, I'm all for that. I think... Like, the Galarian Weezing that they released, I don't know if you've seen it, but it has, like, a smokestack and...
Yeah.
Looks like Doug Dimmadome from Fairly Odd Parents. But I think something that didn't quite make sense to me was they had Galarian forms for the Zigzagoon line. And it looked like... It's like a punk... Or not punk, it's like a heavy metal version of Zigzagoon. So it's got, like, instead of it being that light tan... Like, that beige and that tan color, or brown color, it's now black and white. It's kind of modeling the Kiss band with like the face paint and everything. And they gave it another evolution after Linoon, which I, like I said, I think is cool, but it just doesn't make sense. Like, I think in that aspect, that doesn't really make sense to have just a variant for that. There's nothing really that would cause that to be different in that region.
Right.
It's pretty similar to some of the other regions. So, like, why is it that they didn't have, like, that same variant?
Yeah.
I don't know. It just... Some of them make sense. Some of them don't make sense. I think that one does not make sense.
Talking about things that don't make sense, I want to jump on board for a second on something that people love to hate on the newer Pokemon games, which is the design choices in the newer games. I personally do like some of the older designs better.
Yeah.
But I am not, like, married to them. I think there are some newer ones that look really cool.
Yeah.
I think Generation 3 specifically had a great look.
Yeah.
I know that that was a different designer than I think any of the other generations. I don't think he really came back. I might be wrong with that, but...
I'm not sure either.
That's my understanding, was that the lead designer on that one was different from all the others, which is why it kind of has a bit more of an edgy look on most of its Pokemon.
Yeah.
But one thing I absolutely despise is when they make Pokemon out of inanimate objects.
I knew that was coming.
That are, like, man-made.
So, like, are you referencing, like, the ice cream cone
type, like, Pokemon? Like, the ice cream cone, like, the chandelier,
yeah.
Like, the keys.
Yeah.
All of those... I absolutely despise. I get things looking like Pokeballs. Cool. That makes sense. Rocks, grass, whatever. I'm good with all that. I'm even good with the trash Pokemon.
That's actually really surprising, because to me, that's the one that I think is the least creative design-wise.
Oh, well, it's not creative, but like, it frustrates me because it doesn't make logical sense why you would have Pokemon that look this way.
Yeah.
Like... Some of them you could kind of argue, like keys. Okay, well, they got the idea of keys from this Pokemon, but that's a stretch. But like ice cream, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
Surprisingly, that has not bothered me that much. Like, some people get really triggered by that, like super hard. But it just doesn't really bother me all that much. I don't, maybe I'm just not thinking about it critically enough.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because I actually like the designs of the ones that are the inanimate objects. I never was crazy about Klefki. It's the key Pokemon. But the Vanillish line, that's the ice cream cone, that's a cool line in my opinion. But yeah, I just...
It would be cool if it were man-made. If it were a man-made Pokemon.
Yeah. So like, and they've, you know, they've had that concept since Generation 1. So Porygon was like,
and Mewtwo,
man-made. Both of them. Ditto, I think, is man-made. There's like that whole fan theory that Ditto is actually a spin-off of Mew. It's like a failed Mewtwo clone.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it actually has the same coloration. They both have the same shiny color. They both have the ability to know the move Transform, and yeah, so there's like a fan theory that Ditto is actually a failed Mewtwo clone. Like, there's other things lore-wise, like, you can find Ditto in the Pokemon Mansion where, Mewtwo was supposedly created in Red and Blue. So there's, like, some...
I love these theories.
Yeah, and there's, like, I don't know if you've heard other ones about, like, how Gengar is Clefable's shadow stuff. And I think some of them are really creative. I just wish that Pokemon would have a backbone and...
Actually do some of them?
Yeah, like, say definitively whether some of them are true or not, because... Like, I know some people might feel like that's a retcon to do stuff like that, but, I mean, they could easily just say that that was their initial design of stuff like that.
And I think some things in the games lend to that, too.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. And, you know, I had this thought just now, and maybe this is a potential solution for the company. They have basically a massive splintered fan base at this point.
Yeah.
They have people that grew up with the originals, which are our age in their 20s. They have little bitty kids and everyone in between and even past that. And I think that one thing that is, in my opinion, kind of holding them back is this idea that all Pokemon games have to be like kid-friendly. Minus G rated.
Yeah.
Like like the most base level rated.
Yeah.
And maybe they kind of split off and they have their mainline games that are very much what they have been, very kid friendly.
Yeah.
Maybe they have a spin-off line that's like an advanced mainline type game.
Yeah.
For adults. It doesn't have to be like, you know, gory or really adult oriented, but just something a bit more mature, like yeah. something with more lore, something that yeah. delves into things more, especially with how they've been making the game so easy. That's one of the most frustrating things yeah. for me. They're not challenges anymore. It's just like walking through the world for 8 hours until you beat it.
Yeah, and something we haven't even talked about with the formula staying the same is the storylines haven't really changed all that much throughout the games either. And I know that it seems like that there is a vocal majority of the crowd that does want like a more, not adult content wise, but like a more mature storyline that, you know, tackles more mature topics. And I think that would be kind of cool. It'd definitely be a way to refresh that. And who knows, they might be moving in that direction just because I think they've said now that they're going to try to have the game splintered where there's going to be like a game like Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee that's more for a casual player. Mm-hmm. And then Sword and Shield is supposed to be like the Pokemon game that's for the more intense Pokemon player. So we'll see. I don't know. It doesn't look like the story is anything differently than it has been. But I do know that the ones that have been my favorite games have had like the more in-depth stories. So Black and White had a really good story. Black and White 2 had a really good continuation of that story. X and Y had a decent story in my opinion. And all of those like went a little bit deeper. And I think even in Heart Gold and Soul Silver, they kind of expanded on it a little bit. They added neat little scenes like with special events and everything that kind of added to the lore a little bit. Like there was a Celebi scene that if you got a Celebi from GameStop, it would take you back through time travel and you would see that your main rival was actually Giovanni's son. I don't know if that was alluded to in the original games.
No,
but yeah,
not,
it was
not that I know of.
It was cool. I think that, you know, there's cool stuff like that that they could do. And of course Diamond and Pearl had a really good storyline too, and that dealt with, I don't know, it just dealt with cool concepts. And
yeah,
the teams had what felt like deeper ideals in what they were trying to do. But yeah.
So, all right, let's imagine this series continues on the path it's on. What do you think is going to happen to the franchise at this point? Do you think it's going to like still be good? Do you think it's still going to be massively popular? Do you think it's going to end up falling off because they don't innovate?
So, I've actually been thinking about this. I've seen a couple of things online about the direction that it seems like that they might be going in. I think after the huge success of Pokemon Go, I think the Pokemon company is probably reevaluating whether the future of the Pokemon franchise is on like a handheld console or if it's on a phone. And I think that there is some evidence of that. Like, if you look at Pokemon Masters just came out, and I think that's trying to have more of a feel of like a mainline game, but it's not a mainline game. I think there's some other things. Like, I've seen some interesting talks about how Game Freak is also developing a second game right now. So their development team is actually split. I think it's called House or Home, something like that. I'll have to...
Oh, a game that's not a Pokemon game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did hear about that. And that's like the first non-Pokemon game in a long time.
Right? A really long time.
Yeah.
And so there's actually been some of the debate around whether they were excluding Pokemon from Sword and Shield has been about because they've split their development staff. And if they're kind of seeing the writing on the wall that, you know, Pokemon is moving to a more mobile platform and Game Freak's not really about that. So that they're still trying to like make it so that Game Freak can sustainably still do its thing long term. I feel like they probably are trying to like branch out and do other stuff just so that way, you know, if Pokemon decides that, you know, the future of Pokemon's not in a Switch or some Nintendo console like that, that they can still have something to fall back on. But
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, I think that, you know, there's always going to be a lot of money to be found in casual players, which is why I think stuff like Pokemon Go with microtransactions and everything, it's just like really easy to spend money on stuff like that, and mm-hmm. especially something that plays off of nostalgia, but also reinvigorate some of it. Because I think that overall Pokemon Go has been like a really good thing. Like, I think it gave me that sense of the 90s again.
Yeah, it made things new.
Yeah.
It was different. And because it was different, it brought a whole lot of new people in.
Yep. But I think Pokemon Go has actually fallen victim to the same thing that the main series Pokemon games have fallen victim of, and it's just not really changing anything up. So I know that a lot of the community and the Pokemon Go community has, you know, wanted them to, you know, like, change some of the stuff, how, like, the battle formula, and it took them forever to add trading in.
Yeah.
And stuff, and I think that there's a lot of stuff like that that people wanted from, like, launch or soon after launch, and it took them a really long time to add it. And I think one of the complaints that I see a lot with Pokemon Go is just that it gets, like, old after a while. Even when they release new Pokemon, it's like they don't really do it in a way that makes sense or is challenging. It's just like a grind fest, essentially. And like I played it a lot when it first came out. I took some time away from it, and then my wife and I picked it back up probably last year, in like March or May or something like that. And like, I played it for a really long time after that too, but it just, like, it gets old after a while. Like, it's the same thing. Even if you're catching, like, really powerful Pokemon, it's just the same thing over and over again. And, you know, you're talking about how, like, maybe they could reinvigorate some of this stuff by adding more, you know, mature content to it, not to, like, loop back on that talking point. But I think something that probably has splintered off a lot of people is that, you know, maybe we're just, like, growing out of the target range for these games. Like, that's something that I've had to consider, is that even though I like the games, they're not as challenging as they used to be. I don't know if that's because of how they're developing them.
It's, as someone who has played the older games and the newer games fairly recently, it's definitely something that they've changed.
Yeah, and I think that there's, like, some things about that. Like, my really good friend has an issue with like the cutscenes that they had in Sun and Moon, because it felt like they were like holding your hand throughout the game. Or like he talks about how there's like direct control and indirect control with storytelling, and how you can do some indirect things. And I think there's always been some of that. Like the key thing that I'm thinking of is in Sun and Moon, if you would try to go in an area that you weren't supposed to go to yet, I think like a cutscene would flash, and then something along the lines of like, hey, you can't go this way because something is going on, or like, hey, you need to go back this way because that's where you're supposed to go. And I think they've had stuff like that. So like, even if you look at Red and Blue, the sixth gym in Saffron City, yep, is yes. is that one that has like the four guard buildings surrounding it. And you can only go through once you get like some drink or something from Celadon City and take it to the guard. So there's like some indirect control like that that prevents you from going into an area that you're not supposed to. And I think that's been consistent through most of the games. But for the most part, I think that they've done that just through designing really linear maps.
Yeah. Well, I think the big complaint with that with Sun and Moon was that it wasn't that there were blocks. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. You're right. They've always been there.
Yeah.
It was that the cutscenes were, one, unskippable.
Yeah.
They were really long.
Yeah.
They were not interesting and didn't really have anything to do with the story.
Yeah.
It just felt like filler content.
Yeah.
That slowed down the game versus helping it.
Yeah. And to, like, to the point of that, I think the issue with a cutscene is that when you break away from your normal player camera view and then you switch to like some cutscene camera view, it can like ruin the immersion a little bit.
Yeah.
Not that like Pokemon is all about immersion, but it's like typically how they've done that indirect control is that they will still keep the same camera angle on your player since you're like the central thing in the game, and then they'll just kind of play something out around that. And it's like it's taking part in the world that you're actively taking part in. But I guess with the cutscene, it just like completely breaks you out of the game and then like flashes this thing, like you said, that you can't skip. Now that I think about it, I think one of the reasons why I don't like Sun and Moon that much is that it literally is just so much stuff that you just have to, like, sit there through, and it's just not really interesting.
It takes away the joy of discovery, because it literally tells you everything, which does just that. It takes away the joy of discovery, but it also, like I was saying, feels like it's speaking down to you at our age.
Yeah.
It might not when you're younger,
yeah,
which is fine. And if that's the case, just make them skippable.
Yeah.
You know, there are ways around that. But I think it's in a big contrast to some of Nintendo's other things.
Yeah.
Namely, Breath of the Wild, which was lauded as one of the best games of all time.
Yeah.
Not even on a Nintendo console.
I haven't played yet, which is a travesty.
That's okay. It takes time. You'll get there, maybe, eventually.
We also have a one-year-old, so time is a little limited for me, but...
Yeah, it's a lot harder.
Yeah.
But, like, that... When you compare those two, like, I know they're not the same thing, and they're not even technically the same companies making them, but it's just such a disparity. And, Breath of the Wild came out after Sun and Moon, I think. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's... That's just basic game stuff. And one thing we haven't brought up, and I don't want to go on too long about it because we're getting almost to time, but one thing I think, as a developer, you're a developer too, we've mentioned this, we've talked about this a little bit off air, was that part of the reason I think Pokemon has remained stagnant is I think their developers and the people in Game Freak are not keeping up with modern trends in gaming, both in gameplay, experience, interfaces, programming. Like, it seems when you compare the world of games to Pokemon, Pokemon feels like this weird time capsule from, like, 2001 that has been doing the same thing and isn't looking at everything else in the world.
Yeah.
And I thought that Yo-Kai Watch, when that came out, I thought that that might had been the thing to really start giving Pokemon a run for its money.
Yeah.
And I think it did for a little bit in Japan, but it never really broke out here.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's the competition thing from earlier. It's never given them a reason to do something different, and they need it.
Yeah, something about, like, the developers at Game Freak, and I think that they've done some cool stuff, but something that really just grinds my gears is, like, the lack of optimization. Like, I remember when Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee came out, was something that's been a real turnoff for me is I want to play mobily, because that's what I'm used to, like, with a handheld device. That's what I'm used to playing Pokemon with. Something that, like, really just, like, bothers me is the frame drops.
In battle?
Not even just in battle. Like, it'll happen in overworld stuff, but it's specifically, like, and maybe I just have a bad Switch, I don't know, but I know, like, sometimes when I go into the menus and stuff, or, like, looking at the Pokemon summary, it just feels like it's not responsive, and it just, like, I feel like it's unacceptable. Like, when you have games, and I don't know if Breath of the Wild suffers from frame drops a lot whenever you're in handheld mode, but I just feel like Pokemon... At least the way that they've implemented it is not something that needs to be graphically demanding.
No, it's
and,
not.
And the Switch hardware is definitely should be more than capable of handling it. And it just is, like, really disappointing and upsetting, and feels like that they're not really trying that hard to optimize it when it just is, like, dropping frames for absolutely no reason in areas that it shouldn't be dropping frames in. And I think, too, there was something I was going to say. Shoot.
That happens to me a lot.
What was it?
Frame rate?
No, it wasn't about the frame rates. This is a hard cut.
No, this is good.
Dang, man.
Well, if you think about it, we'll circle back to it.
Okay.
Breath of the Wild on docked mode does occasionally have slowdowns.
Okay.
Typically, it is in one of two situations. One where you are in an area with a lot of grass, like a very wide open area and a lot of grass, which makes sense. or if you blow up a ton of stuff at once.
Yeah, I mean that happens in most games.
Right. And that makes sense. Yeah. But on Pokemon, it doesn't. I don't remember having any slowdown or lags. I was thinking I had, but I was actually thinking of the DS games.
Yeah.
Maybe actually Sun and Moon. That
yeah.
totally had slowdown oh, yeah. in battle. And I feel like I can forgive it in Zelda because it is so big.
Mm-hmm.
But for Pokemon, especially when you're in battle, there's nothing around.
Yeah, like the issue with the 3DS lines with the battle is like when they introduced horde battles in Generation 6, like, they tried to add 3D features, especially if you turn the 3D on. It was awful.
Yeah.
Like, it was so, like, jumpy. But I mean, there were times even when you had the 3D turned off that it was dropping frames.
And oh, yeah.
I don't understand that.
All the time.
It just, and like that's, it would happen occasionally in the, like the DS line, not the 3DS line. So there's like a specific spot that I can remember in Black and White. If you're on your bike in a city and you go over this one bridge, it just will like stutter as you're going over the bridge, like consistently could reproduce it. Yeah, I don't really understand it because it's not something that should be doing that. Like, they're not graphically demanding games. It's not like we're talking about something like I can understand if I'm playing Skyrim on the Switch and it's dropping frames. Not that Skyrim is like super demanding at this point, but it's like that has way more detail and stuff going on than a Pokemon game does. Yep. Like, it's not like Pokemon has active physics going around that like is taking away
yeah.
like processing power to cause something like that to happen. It doesn't make any sense.
When you've got Skyrim and The Witcher 3 both running on the Switch pretty yeah. good, there's no excuse.
Yeah, and I think even Doom runs really well on the Switch. Yeah. I haven't played that at all, but
I've heard good things though.
Yeah. I just like that's to me that seems like that's unforgivable, you know, like I'm still going to play the games, but that's unforgivable. Like, I don't understand how the developers are, like, not optimizing their games to the point where, like, it's lagging like that. Yeah. It just is, it's unforgivable. Like, I don't know what else to call it, you know?
All right. So, I've got two more things just to finish this out. This has been a really good conversation, I must say.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it.
So two things. First off, what do you think has been the biggest innovation in the games? And for two different things. I want to know biggest innovation for hardcore players, which mm-hmm. I think I know what you're going to say, and then biggest innovation for casual players.
So this is a tough question because I really want to just say the features that are my favorite, which mm-hmm. I think everybody wants to end up doing that. I actually feel like for hardcore players, one of the best things they added was Mega Evolutions. It's like a love-hate thing because it broke up a lot of like consistent teams that people would like constantly run, but then that then caused people to consistently run with like teams so,
yeah.
that had those Pokemon on them. So, but I think it added just like a lot of variety to it. I think in that same vein for the hardcore players, something cool that they did, and this is like a callback to something we were talking about earlier. You were saying about how it would be cool if there was like this isolated like Pokemon universe. Black and White was kind of like that because they didn't, at least for the main part of the game, they introduced like a completely new 150 Pokemon and you couldn't like catch any older Pokemon until after you beat the game, and then you could transfer them over from your previous systems. I think stuff like that is like cool for hardcore players just because it feels familiar, but it's like completely new. I don't know if I can speak too much on the hardcore side of things just because from the battling standpoint, I enjoy battles, but I've never really been into like the hardcore battling scene.
Yeah.
But as far as like the casual stuff, I think that, I mean, just small stuff, like in Heart Gold and Soul Silver, having your Pokemon follow you, you know? Like, I was excited when they added that feature back in for Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee. It's just cool. It, like, makes it feel more personal, and, like, you can go through the game and have your favorite Pokemon walking behind you, and it, mm-hmm. like, I think something that I've really enjoyed with Pokemon throughout the years is, like, even though they're little bytes of data in a chip that I play, it's like they're mine, you know? Like, yeah. I have bred them. I have, like, trained them up. I, like, well, usually always give them nicknames. Like, it feels like they have personality to them. I know that they're not alive or real or anything, but, like, it feels personal.
Yeah, it's like the Tamagotchi phenomenon.
Yeah, and I think that, like, that seems like that should be universal for everybody. Like, the small stuff to just, like, create connection with the Pokemon that you care about, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I know that they've tried to add features like Pokemon and Me.
Yes.
Where you can, like, play with your Pokemon. I think, to me, that was a bit of a miss. Like, I would much rather have your Pokemon following around and, like, being able to interact with them in the overworld than, like, going to this segmented, like, screen where you can, like, pet them. It just felt really gimmicky and not well executed, but I think stuff like that, just that, like, bridges connection with your team, your Pokemon, your squad.
Okay, so
What were you thinking?
So my biggest innovation for hardcore players was the introduction of the IV system back in, I don't know if that was in Gen 2 or Gen 3, but whenever they introduced that, or EVs,
yeah,
EVs, IVs, whatever it is, I think that was probably the biggest for me change for hardcore stuff that I know of, because like that, I feel like that kind of defined...
Oh, yeah.
Hardcore.
So they had, like, playing. You know, the I think they're called, like, DVs or something like that in Gen 1 and Gen 2, but adding, like, the IV and EV system in Gen 3, I might change my answer to that. There's actually one other thing that I forgot about. This is a notable mention. In Generation 4, they revamped the move, like, the move system
for
battling and stuff, to where... Before, it was based off of type. It was whether it was a physical or special attack. And then going forward, revamped it to where, like, if it by name was a physical or a special attack. So within each type, you could have physical and special attack. I think that was, like, a great change that they did. Like, that was really good. But, yeah, EVs and IVs, when I first discovered those things, that was, like, world-shattering.
Yeah.
It was crazy, man. Like, that's a game changer.
And then for casual, I don't know, because I feel like most of the changes they've made have been for the hardcore players.
Yeah.
There hasn't been a lot of innovation for casual people except for the graphics.
Yeah.
Especially ones that carry through.
Yeah.
That's the
eternal problem, man, is that they'll, like, add new things and then just, like, cut them out, you know?
I don't even have a best one for... I guess I could say a one-off. The best thing was when they put two games together in Gold and Silver.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like that's a cheap answer, but that's all I got. All right. And then the other thing is, what do you think they should do going forward to reinvigorate the franchise?
Well, I think there's two things that they could... I'll give two. Is that cool if I give two?
Yeah.
So, something that they've done in previous games that has been good, in my opinion, is adding, like, post-game content. Because some of the games now, it's like you'll beat them and there's not a whole lot to do. And it's typically, like, the first release of whatever generation it is. And they'll try to add stuff for, like, a sequel generation or something like that, a sequel game. But it just... doesn't feel like, as of late, that they've had much in the way of, like, battling post-game stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, in Generation... I think it was... started with Emerald. They had the Battle Frontier. And they took that out in Generation 5 and didn't add it back in. And I think that, like, that was a really fun thing to do. I know that's been, like, a key issue for my really good friend. Like, his problem with it is that, like, there's just not a whole lot to do once you, like, beat the game and, you know, catch Pokemon.
Especially if beating the game is as easy as they've made it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, just, like, built-in post-game content. And then the second thing I was going to say, to kind of, like, bridge off of the first one, is I'd be okay even if they didn't have post game content built in right off the bat, but if they added DLCs that added more content or more regions or stuff to do like in the base game, I know that's probably a controversial thing just because like it can easily get to a point where they're just like delivering half the content that they used to and just banking on like the whole Destiny system.
Yeah.
Where you just like deliver this half-baked game and then just like essentially on good faith say you're gonna like add better content later on. I think that's a terrible system. I don't like that, but I think if you deliver like a complete game and then add stuff onto it, I remembered the thing I was gonna say earlier. I think something that's kind of prevented Pokemon from changing is the fact that they are trying to release one game a year now. And so they're ramping up development cycles.
That is never a good thing.
No,
they have gone the Assassin's Creed route, and we all know how well that worked out for them.
Yeah, they're going quantity over quality, and I'm not a fan of that. And so it's like forcing them to essentially like cut down on the amount of stuff that they're releasing. I think that DLC might be a way to get around that, but I think that it changes things because then you have to start like asking the question of how are you going to price out the game? How are you going to price out DLC?
Yeah.
Because sometimes, like in EA's case, it doesn't like feel good to pay for a full game and then pay for like half a game three times over just to like get more content. And then by the time you've done all of that, you've paid for like 2.5 games, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that could be something that they could do to kind of change things up is like add stuff post game.
Mm.
Either from launch or after launch.
You know, you gave me some really interesting ideas while you were saying that. I actually had one idea, which was you mentioned like adding DLC with like different regions and stuff. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, I was like, well, what if we have Smash Bros. Ultimate? What if you did Pokemon Ultimate, which had a fair bit of content for like the base game, but then there was DLC where it would add all the past regions to it.
Yeah.
And like if it's a whole region, it would make sense that it would cost like a chunk of change.
Yeah.
But then in my mind that kind of morphed into, well, why not have a living Pokemon game?
Yeah.
Like think Overwatch or something like that where the game changes, they add stuff to it.
Yeah.
But it's still the same game. Like you could basically do that with Pokemon, and instead of releasing a new actual game every year, you could release a new one every 4 or 5 years and just build upon it.
Yeah, so just like release the base game and then just like continually iterate on it and adding stuff to like going back to previous regions. Like I think that would be so cool.
Basically the MMO style of releasing content, but on a single player platform.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense to me. I feel like you can wrap everything up in one. You don't have to buy all the different things. Like if your favorite one is Gen 2, then sure, you could buy the Johto DLC when it comes out.
Yeah, like the Johto expansion and then just go to Johto if you want to. And, you know, if you don't want to, then you don't have to go.
Yeah.
You know?
I feel like that model for Pokemon actually works really well. Because it also allows you to gradually add in the Pokemon in all the different systems instead of having to do it all up front and having to fork out all of that time and money for it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think that maybe that would be a better model.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, criticisms of that might be that, like, you know, you want to carry your Pokemon over from one region to another. So how do the levels scale and stuff? But I think that they could easily do something like I know. Titanfall and Call of Duty type games have like a respawn or a regeneration thing where you like essentially reset. I don't know if that would be the way to play that out. They could either go that route or say like, you know, you can't bring your Pokemon over until you like go through the main thing. Then it feels like a fresh game, but I don't know. I agree with you. I think that would be a really cool way to like change everything up going forward just because they've seemed to have alluded to DLC, like, from the 3DS line till now. They just haven't added it. Like, I know in X and Y, they had, like, a train station that was supposed to go somewhere, and it just never went anywhere. And it's, like, content like that that they're just dropping on the floor, you know?
Yeah, that's sad.
It is sad, just because they don't feel like they could make money from it. I don't know, but...
Okay, all right, so for my What I, the one thing that I think they should do going forward, I actually also have two.
Okay.
In addition to what I just said, because I think that's a fantastic idea. Yeah, actually.
Great. We need to write a letter to them.
Right?
This is how to handle Pokemon
going forward. If anyone out there knows anyone at Game Freak or the Pokemon Company or Nintendo, please send this on. Okay. So, if I remember what both my things were, the first thing actually kind of goes back to one thing you were saying. They haven't made a lot of changes, but when they make changes that make you feel like your Pokemon are actually animals and creatures instead of just a thing in a game,
yep,
those always make it better. Like you said, following behind you, when you can ride them.
Yeah.
I do agree the Pokemon on me was pretty terrible, in my opinion, but maybe a better version of that.
I agree.
Doing something. I don't know what that is necessarily, but I actually really liked the contest from Gen 3.
Yeah.
Like the beauty contest and all those different whatever you could do with them.
Yeah.
I thought those were cool. So maybe bringing some of those things forward would help a lot. And then the other thing is just taking more risks. I mean, you know, it's like the old adage, to make money, you got to spend money.
Yeah.
To do something great that people like, you have to take a risk. Nothing great was ever done without risk. You know, you hear about all these great things. It could be anything. It could be a story of someone. It could be a movie. It could be a book or a film. Almost universally, the things that are great had struggles getting made. And when you just repeat the same things, it gets stale and people aren't interested, especially these days where, you know, everything's instant.
Yeah. And there's like so much that's competing for attention. And it's like, if I'm not getting good content from Pokemon, you know, there is a developer over here, whether it's a small developer or a large developer, that is like willing to make good on the promise of, you know, I'm developing this good and I think you're going to enjoy it, and they might be able to deliver on that better than Pokemon has been. And I think that's like the root issue, and I think that's why there might be discussions going on about whether the franchise is still on consoles. Because, like, they haven't really done much to, like, show that that is the way to go. Because they're not, like, really taking any risks. Yeah. So, I agree with that.
All right. This has been a fantastic conversation.
Yeah, I agree. I enjoyed it.
This is good. I like this a lot. But, that was that, and this is this. It's time for what you've been up to. So, Dylan, I kind of sprung this on you right before we started recording. Is there anything you've been up to that you would like to share?
Yeah, I have been playing Minecraft like crazy. I was building a horse stable last night, and you laughed because I said I was building a horse stable for my horses, and you're like, "What? I thought it was going to be for your chickens." So that's actually been fun. I had like played it back in 2012.
Yeah.
And like intermittently between then and now, and had like taken a, you know, a step away from it and then came back recently, and it's a lot of fun, man.
It's great, right?
It's a good game.
I do that like every 2 or 3 years, I'll jump back in, and it's like the stuff they've added. The last time I jumped in, I was very sad though, because I was not a fan of the combat update.
Yeah.
So I actually rolled back to the version before that.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's just me.
Yeah, like something I've been doing is they have like pirate ships now underwater, and like these underwater like sunken ruins that you can go to.
That's cool.
And so I've just been like swimming underwater, taking some doors with me, putting them down so I can have like little pockets of air,
yeah,
and just exploring and finding some cool stuff. So that's what I've been up to.
Cool.
Yeah, what about you?
Well, so I kind of already mentioned it to you off air. I have been playing Zelda Breath of the Wild,
yeah,
specifically. I think I talked about this last week maybe, but I've been holding off on going into it until I had some time. And then one day I just said, forget that. And I just jumped in, which was both a massive mistake and a fantastic mistake. Because it's great. I mean, yeah, everybody knows it's great.
It was a good mistake.
Right. And yesterday, we had a party for some friends Saturday, and yesterday I was exhausted from it. So I literally sat on the couch all day and did nothing but play Zelda. Like, it is the most lazy I have been in a very long time. Like, I got up and I sat down in there maybe at 10, and I did not leave the couch to do anything until like 7.
I envy that so much,
like,
man.
Like, Courtney, I didn't even ask Courtney to, but she even brought me lunch from the kitchen. Like, I didn't even stop to eat lunch. I took a couple bites, played, paused, took some more bites.
Yeah.
Like, it, I mean, I was being lazy, but honestly, it was, like, really good for me because things have been busy. But it's phenomenal. I mean, I feel like I'm saying things that people said 2 years ago when it came out, but it's just so good. I've gotten
to, okay. I still have yet to experience it.
Right? You have to.
I know.
I've gotten to the first Divine Beast, and I definitely got myself stuck on it, and it did something I wasn't supposed to, so I died. I don't know. There's 4 Divine Beasts. I don't know if you know. But
I think they talk about it in, like, the opening thing.
Yeah.
Like, I've played a little bit of it, but they have, like, the opening, like, cutscene or whatever.
Yeah.
So.
It's pretty cool. So, anyway, that's mostly what I've been doing. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I've been really busy. Jacob and I have been doing our D&D campaign with some of our friends. That's coming to a close soon. I think he said we maybe have, like, 3 more sessions.
Gotcha.
So we have that tomorrow. So that's pretty awesome. Other than that, not much. I haven't jumped back into Titans yet, season 2, which was a show that we've been watching. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah. I'm still crying about Spider-Man.
Oh, boy.
We can talk about that another time, though.
Yeah, that's
I'm still a sad boy about that.
I think I'll always be a sad boy.
Yeah.
Maybe a little salty, too.
But there is news on the horizon that Apple might buy Sony for their distribution
rights. I have not heard that.
So if they do, Spider-Man would automatically go back to Marvel Studios.
I've heard that before because it's contingent on if someone buys them. I don't know if that's true or not.
So, you know, we're already going a little bit long, so I don't want to carry it on too much, but I know that Apple is, like, I think wanting to do their own streaming system similar to Disney+.
Yeah, they've announced it, yeah.
So I think that they're probably looking for, you know, some company that has, like, some distribution rights, probably like Sony, so.
But Sony doesn't. I was actually looking, when the whole Spider-Man thing happened, I went online and I was like, what does Sony actually have? Nothing. They have nothing. Spider-Man is the only thing they have that people
I know,
watch.
And they're being so greedy with it.
like you think of Warner Brothers or other things, and, like, I can figure out what they have. Sony has nothing.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a conversation for another day. Again, Dylan, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, man.
Hopefully we'll do this again.
Yeah. I'd love to if you would have me again.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But as always, we do want to say thank you to Taylor Poole for doing our opening and outro music. You can find him at taylorpoolemusic.com. That's TAYLORPOOLE music.com. Also, check out our friends over at the CNC Power Hour. You can hear Chris from that show last week. He was on our last episode. We talked about something. I don't remember what we talked about, but go check out what it was.
It's riveting.
It's been a long week. They stream Magic the Gathering and video games throughout the week, every day now of the week, actually. So they're on Twitch, twitch.com/CNC Power Hour. And also, please check out our website while you are roaming around the interwebs. It is the best way to share the show. It's got links to all of the listening platforms. It's just an all-around great thing. Thanks for listening to 'Cause We're Nerds. Stay up to date with all the nerdy news and podcast drops by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also leave us comments and feedback at 'cause we're nerds@gmail.com. That's CUZWERENERDS @gmail.com. And as always, if you enjoy this podcast, we would love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. We'll see you next week, and as always, stay nerdy. So normally we do a funny thing at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Hey, how many tickles make an octopus laugh?
How many?
10 tickles. That is courtesy of Amelia's baby lullabies.
That's great.